Welcome to the Productivity Show by Asian Efficiency, helping you do more and be better. And now here's your host, Zachary Sexton.
Thank you for tuning into the Productivity Show by Asian Efficiency. My name is Zachary Sexton, and today I have with me Annie Mueller. Welcome, Annie.
Thanks, Zach. It's great to be here today.
Well, it's great to have you. And Annie wrote a pretty funny introduction, so I had my own, but I'm going to have to go with hers, is a freelance writer and mom of four kids aged 8 and under, whom she also homeschools. And in her free time, she could be found hiding in her closet, weeping softly. And on the weekends, she likes to imagine sleeping in. But she's not in the closet right now because she's duct taped her students in there.
Kids. They're all duct taped to the wall.
They're duct taped to the wall. Yeah. All right.
That really works better than locking them in the closet. So it's my new method.
Oh, okay. Okay. That sounds better. But you threw some cookies at them. They're all right, right?
Just toss them. They're great. They're so happy.
Oh, that's good. So if you couldn't guess, today's show, we're going to be discussing productive parenting. And we're going to give you a lot more great tips like the duct tape to the wall method and the crying in the closet and imagining sleeping in on the weekends. Like, those are all fantastic productivity tips from Annie Mueller. And you might have seen Annie on our blog a few times. And actually, she's got a handful more articles that have just been released at the air of this show on productive parenting. So it's really good timing on our part. We're going to have a lot of that stuff. And we've been getting requests for the Productivity Show to have some stuff on productive parenting. So are you ready to dive into that topic, Annie?
Now I'm ready. Let's dive in.
All right. So the first thing that came to mind as somebody who has no kids at the moment is, what was that initial effect of having the first kid? And actually, what's your eldest name?
Mara.
So Mara came into the world, and you have always been, we were talking before, somebody who likes to accomplish a lot. Like, even as a kid, you were saying, oh, I didn't get to play with every single Barbie, so tomorrow I'll be better. What was that initial effect of Mara coming in and on your productivity?
Well, yeah, and I like to focus, and I know Asian Efficiency talks a lot about that multitasking is not a great practice. Unfortunately, what I've found as soon as baby number one came along is that to really get anything done, you have to just constantly be multitasking. So you have to divide your attention pretty much all the time. And even when, you know, they're in that infant stage where they're sleeping half the day, you still have that kind of one ear awareness of, okay, what's happening with baby in the other room while I'm trying to get through my list of things to do. So there's a division of your attention that just starts. And nobody ever warned me about that. Like, hey, when you have kids, this will happen. They'd warn me a lot of other things. But so that's a big shift, or it was for me. I was learning how to have an awareness of some other tiny human that depended on me, and also return focus and get through different tasks and projects that I had going on.
Wow. Yeah, that was something I would have never even considered either. You know, sometimes if my dog is scratching himself a little too loud, I lose focus. And to think that, okay, there's another human I'm responsible for, but I'm working on this, but they, you know, I got to make sure they stay alive, but I'm working on that would be one that I wouldn't have thought of. And were there any other differences after Mara?
Well, we had our four children fairly quickly. Some of that by plan and some not. The main thing that has been, I guess, maybe the most difficult thing for me is being productive and being a parent, is that I'm an introvert. I really like having alone time and downtime. That's when I get my most creative work done. That's when I feel energized, when I can really make plans and think deep about things, is when I can just be silent and focused. I usually don't have music going. I'm just into what I'm doing. Well, if you enter 1, 2, 3, and then 4 children into your life, those moments of silence, they don't exist anymore. They just really don't. So I've had to learn how to flex from my kind of natural preferred working environment, I guess we could say, and learn how to work in a lot of more chaotic situations, which is really something that a lot of people have to learn in many different applications. If you're going to travel, if you're in an office environment, you know, you have a coworker who makes noises all the time, whatever, we all have to deal with that in different ways. With kids, though, it's like it's 24/7. Since I do homeschool, mom, they don't go off to school in the morning and come back 6 hours later. So it's a constant, challenge in my life is to learn how to give myself those pockets of focused time while also still being the mom and being available when they need me.
What are some of those strategies that you've used to find those pockets of focused time, to refresh, to deal with the fact that you might have a little more noise or a little bit more multitasking than normal?
Well, one is the duct tape, as mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
That's a powerful parenting tool. Other than that, early morning is my friend. I've always been a morning person. It's become more and more important with the kids that, I just notice a huge difference in my days. When I get up, I usually get up around 5. I get up and go and get a couple of hours of just personal time. I can plan my day. I usually do some reading, journal, and then get, maybe an hour of work done. That makes a huge difference in my day. Even if I don't accomplish a lot, maybe my list of things I did during that time wasn't long as far as I didn't write, 2,000 words or anything like that. But I am settled and energized and focused, and I know what is ahead. So making that a priority has been important, which also means that then I do have to go to bed at a decent hour. And that can be tricky because my husband's a night person. So he always wants to stay up and watch movies and talk until midnight, and that just doesn't jive real well when your alarm's going to go off 5 hours later.
Yeah, that's funny. We had a previous guest on who has a very similar wake up at 5 a.m., set the tone for the day, do things that he needs to do for himself, and then his wife is the opposite, wants to try to keep him up.
Right. It seems to be kind of a partnership that happens a lot. And the good thing is what has worked for us, which is kind of another strategy, is trading off times with my husband. He is a salesman, so he works from home, and he travels part of the week, but those days when he's home, he's usually home about 4 days out of the week and gone about 3. So those days when he's home, he can second shift. I can say, look, I'm tired. I need to wrap up my day and go to bed early. And he can take care of doing the baths and getting the kids in bed. Or he can handle the kids in the afternoon if I haven't gotten my work done in the morning. So we trade off. And that helps a lot. So that's been an important strategy. Or, hey, you hang with the kids or take them to the park and I'm going to go sit in a coffee shop by myself for a couple hours. So having those trade-offs really is important. It's a little tricky. We're still figuring out how to do it because he does have a full-time job. So it's not like he has that flexibility of any time. But he does have some flex in his work schedule, and I can obviously flex mine since I'm a freelancer working from home. So that helps a lot.
Well, good. So you're trading off time. I know in one of the articles that's going to be released, you're talking about other ways to find time. Everyone has the option of possibly a babysitter, but that gets expensive. And you're talking about trading off with other kids with families with kids, as well as maybe that's your, hey, for Christmas, all I want is free babysitting.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I've traded babysitting for writing work. I've traded for giving music lessons to a babysitter who want to learn how to play guitar. I've traded all sorts of things, or you're just trading with other parents. My sister-in-law and I did that for a couple of years running, where we'd trade off half days. I'd watch her kids and then she'd watch mine. So there are a lot of ways to work that in into your schedule. Another thing I've done that saves some of the money on a babysitter is getting a younger teenager to come in, and I'll still be at home. It might be somebody that, is younger and not as experienced, so I wouldn't be comfortable leaving them alone with my kids, but they can be there kind of playing and overseeing things. I'm in my office, the door's shut, I can focus and still hear if there's a need, I can pop out and take care of it. And, those younger gals who are just usually gals, I don't have any guys who volunteered for that so far. They're still learning, so they're usually happy with the real minimum kind of, payment plan, or switching out for, something fun, or I don't know. There's a lot of different options there, but those are definitely some strategies that can be put into play. And then family is always great. My in-laws live here in the area, and I take advantage of that pretty often.
Good, good. Mm-hmm. So there is going to be a decline in productivity. Is that decline permanent?
Well, it's too early for me to tell you because I still have them all here at home.
Yeah.
No. Well, actually, no. I've really, and I can't speak universally on this, really, only from my own experience. But what I've seen is, you know, you have a baby, there's that initial period of time when it's really just all consuming because you've got this infant and they're not sleeping and they, you know, need constant care. But obviously they grow and they become more independent, and then they're going to either go off to school or they're going to be able to entertain themselves a little bit more. I think that there's a correspondence between how your children, you know, as they age and become more independent, and then also I've learned to put more and better strategies in place to really help myself be productive. So those two, you know, what's correlation, what's causation? I don't know. It's a kind of a teamwork thing there, but I've learned to be better about being productive. I've learned to set limits for myself and really define what my work is instead of having this 2 mile long to-do list that's just overwhelming. And then as the kids have grown older, I mean, my youngest is only 3 still, but she's able to do a lot and play with the older kids. So I do see a definite increase in productivity in my life from when, say, we were like in, you know, really intense baby stage. So I think, yeah, it does get better. It does get easier. And you also learn the skills and the strategies that you need as you put them into place to work with your family and kind of train your kids. And this is how our life works, that you find out how things can work for you to be productive and still be a parent.
Nice. So, and just a reminder, I was reading your article before we got on, and mm-hmm. we have the same definition of productivity, which is consistently taking action towards your goals. And you're talking about over the years, it's probably a mix of column A and column B. Your kids right. are growing older, so they're a little bit less all-consuming. They don't need to be held or put to bed or all of these different things at every single moment. Right. But you also started finding strategies that worked for you and your family. What were some of those highest leverage strategies that that really started to help?
Well, I think probably the main one is realizing that I can't actually do all of the things I'd like to do. You know, I mean, it's just, it's so tempting to add. I'm always energized by new ideas and new projects. And I, you know, I think a lot of people work that way. So I want to add things to my plate because that's exciting at the time. But then you get into the crunch of actually doing those things. And when you just have too much going on, for me, that is so overwhelming mentally that I can't work as efficiently and creatively as I normally would. So I've had to really define what my priorities are. And I think that's a good practice for anybody at any stage of life. Because there's always more opportunities than there is time, always, whether you have kids or not, there just will always be more open doors than you can actually walk through. So I've learned to say no, a lot sooner than I used to, and to really define, what my main areas, my main focus areas in life are. And when I say yes to something, it better fit into one of those, or it's really not going to get my time. And even if it does fit into one of those focused areas, it needs to be up at the top of the list of something I really want to do and accomplish. I just, you know, you can't, if it's something's halfway interesting, it just needs to go. I don't have time for that. And I like that, because when I have a simpler life, a more focused life, then it's easy to make a decision about what needs to be worked on and how to work on it. So reducing complication, reducing that decision making by having focused areas. And then a thing that's really helped me would be putting systems into place for every possible area in life that I can. And that's just something I do continually. I'm always looking at parts of my life and, okay, how can I streamline that? How can I systematize that? And my goal is really selfish here, Zachary, because what I want to do is make it so that I can train my husband or my kids to do that thing that I don't want to do, like the laundry. And the more systematized and streamlined it is, the more I can pass things off and get help instead of feeling like I have to do them all myself.
Nice. Optimize, then outsource. That's
that's right. And when you have kids, it's they're right there just waiting. Hey, I want to fold that laundry. None of my kids has ever said that, but maybe someday they will.
Make the laundry game.
Right.
That's cool. So what are some of those systems? You know, there's the common ones you might think of, maybe the morning ritual or the evening ritual, mm-hmm. but what are those specifically, and you know, what are the exact routines, and how have they helped? Maybe you can just give us two or three of those, so people can take notes and start outsourcing their work or making their days go a little bit more smoothly.
Sure. A couple that have really helped, I guess, you know, more from the parenting angle, things that always clog up my to-do list are like the household things, the chores and the just maintenance of life and our space and our stuff. And when you have kids, that tends to be destroyed more often, much quicker. So there's a lot of maintenance. So we do chores, system. That's always been a system I've had. My kids have a chore list. I have a chore list every morning. They get up and we do breakfast and we go through our chores, and they have like a little, money amount at the bottom of each day, like 50 cents or a dollar, depending on who it is and how old they are. And they know when they complete their chores for that day, then that money like goes in their bucket. And at the end of the week, they get to collect that money. It's kind of an allowance. It's kind of payment, however you want to break it down, but it's motivational for them. And then I know those things are really getting done every day. And I, you know, it's things like emptying the cat litter box and, you know, wiping down the bathroom counter. It's not really hard things, but it's things that need to be done and that they contribute and do. And then I have my own little list. So we have our little chore ritual that we do after breakfast every day. So that's been a really helpful one that helps us just keep rolling through the week when we're at our busiest, and make sure things aren't totally chaotic. And if somebody shows up at the door, we can let them in the house without them screaming.
I like it. The one thing I noticed about your routine or your ritual is that it really aligns with this book I read recently called The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg.
Oh, yeah,
it has the cue, the marker or the starting point, which is after breakfast. And then it has the routine, so wipe down the counters or whatever routine it is. And then it has the reward, which is the allowance at the end of the month, which will help keep that that motivation going and keep that craving going. And those are the types of habits that stick. And right. So since you have all three of those parts, I think that's probably a big reason. Did you just say you read that book as well?
Oh, yeah. That's a great book. And I probably tweaked my system because for a while I didn't have a little allowance thing going. So it was just kind of do your chore list and check it off. And I think it was after I read Duhigg's book that we added that in.
Oh, great.
Yeah, we did candy for a while. They would, you know, get up when they were a little bit younger. And for my five-year-old, his name is Zeke, and he is just, he's five, so there's that. But he's just one of these energetic, easily distracted children. He's a lot like my husband, come to think of it. But anyway, I will literally tell him, hey, Zeke, go brush your teeth. And he'll turn around and take two steps away. He will come back, look at me and say, I forgot. What'd you just tell me to do? 5 seconds ago, I told you to brush your teeth. Go brush your teeth. So for him, I would do like after each chore, he would get like a little M&M. Do a chore. It was like training a dog. I felt a little bit bad about it, but it worked really well. And now he can make it through his whole little list and then get his reward at the end. It's a piece of candy or, you know, 50 cents in his bucket. But
yeah, it probably helps when they can start getting to that age where they can start to read, so they don't have to remember everything. Because I know, yes. I'm exactly like Zeke. If I don't have I'm like Zeke, but I know how to write list and read from them. And so if I didn't have that, I would need somebody to say, do this, and then give me an M&M or something.
Right.
Because otherwise I would be lost. But I think that what you're doing is just getting them in such the routine and such the habit that eventually it'll just be second nature, you know.
Right.
Like you wake up in the morning and you go have breakfast and then you brush your teeth. Like that's just what you do.
Right.
Do you find if you change the routines at all or miss a routine for a couple of days that it falls out of place, or how do you deal with any sort of entropy or staying consistent?
We do. I mean, missing routine days is actually, this morning was one of those mornings. We had, you know, our best laid plans. My husband was going to take the kids today. This is his office day. So he was going to spend the first half with them. I got my work done and then switch off. But instead, what happened is that we got my car, a Suburban, stuck up on this like mud drive. We just bought some property, so we were driving up there last night to go check on it, and it got stuck. So instead, we got to go out there and try to like get the truck unstuck this morning, and then trade off children with muddy boots, and I was rushing back here. And so it was one of those fun little chaotic mornings where we just totally blew off the chores. Like, that didn't happen, and I'm not going to tell you what my house looks like right now because, well, it's not good. So having those off days, definitely they happen. It's part of life. We have some mornings where we do have to get up and rush out the door. And if I don't stay aware of that and don't click us right back into it the next day, if we miss one day, it's not a big deal. No big deal. We hop right back into it. If we miss 2 or 3 days, then everybody gets off kilter, and we just, it's like we all kind of forget what we're doing. So, and that's never good when you have a crowd of small children for nobody to know what they're doing, because that's when the chaos just happens and it's not good. So yeah, there are definitely times when that's happened, and I usually just have to step up and kind of get us motivated, you know, remind the kids, what are we doing here? What's our focus? Let's get right back to routine, give them their cues again. And then after a day or two of being in the routine, they, you know, you slide right back into place. It's the great thing about habits. I think, you know, you can definitely get out of them, but if they've, that foundation's been established, then once you pick it back up again, it's like your mind goes, oh yeah, yeah, I know this. This is what I do. And you get right back in that groove.
Cool. Do you have any other visual cues or anything out there to help remind you? Maybe it's been a day or two and you're like, wait a minute, oh, I got to snap back in. Or is that just your responsibility? Remember, these things need to be done.
I mean, I have lists for everything. I am a chronic list maker. I am a paper and pen person. So even though we have 20 zillion digital apps that could like remind me of everything, I do a lot better with like sticky notes and notebooks. And I have a paper planner. That's what I use. So I have lists for everything. I have chore lists. I have a menu plan. I have a list of the things we do on the weekend to get, you know, I mean, I'm terrible. I'm terrible with lists. I make them all the time.
So you have menu plans for the week.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lifesaver, because that way if, say if my husband's home and I need to finish up an article or get a piece edited, I can say, hey, this is what's for dinner, and know that all the ingredients are there. He can take that on, and we can still, you know, eat something and not order pizza. And then also we try to do most of our errands and shopping on the weekends. Even though I'm home and I'm flexible and I could get it all done during the week, what I found is when I try to cram all that stuff in, it eats up a lot of time, because there are lots of transitions that go with those sort of things. It's not just, oh, go to the grocery store for half an hour. It's get all the kids, get in the car, go shop, unload, come back. But, you know, it's a big deal. So those things we save for the weekends when either one of us can, you know, go run out and do the shopping and come back, or we can both go together. And it's kind of like a slash family time slash errand. It's kind of a sad excuse for family time, but it works, you know.
Yeah, I even find with somebody who does not have to load 4 human beings into a Suburban and do my chores that way,
right.
I from working from home, that it's the same thing. You almost need to have your work time be your work time and your weekends be your weekends.
Right.
And even though, yeah, I've got the capability of doing that, like it's totally possible, it just tanks my productivity when I do that.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
Really early on when I started working from home, it was kind of difficult for people to understand.
Oh, yeah.
I felt like they're like, oh, Zach, pick me up from the airport. Oh, Zach, could you run out and do this? I'm like, no, I can't.
No. Yeah.
So being cognizant of your time and your limits. And we were already at the top. We were talking about right when you had the first kid is dividing your attention. If you're trying to divide your attention between work and errands and all that other stuff without any sort of system behind it, that that really won't allow much focus in any area.
Yeah, that's right. And that's, you know, one of the things I I use a lot is like time blocking. I you know, I don't have to schedule things in 15-minute increments, and I don't want to. I mean, that makes me like twitchy and break out in hives. I can't handle that kind of detail. But I had the same issue, you know, when you have kids and you're at home, and then you also homeschool, and then you also work from home, people assume, like you said, that you have this infinite amount of flexibility. I think what they really assume is that you're not actually working. You're just like hanging out at home. I think that's what the assumption actually is. So I've had to really set my own schedule, basically, by saying, okay, you know, I block this part of my day is for work, and this part of my day is for homeschooling the kids, and this part of my day is just for having family time, or for going out with a friend, or for running errands, whatever. And I've had to set those boundaries for myself. And then when, you know, the neighbor wants to stop by and chat, or somebody needs a ride somewhere, or I think of that errand, I have to tell myself and whoever else it is, you know, I really can't. I have this designation here, and I have to stick to that. And that to me has become kind of a integrity issue. It's easy for me to rearrange things, and I could, but you never get that productivity back because you've lost some time in those transitions and that rearranging. And I've had to kind of dial back down to zero and say, you know, if I commit even just to myself that I'm going to spend this block of time on this, you know, area, I'm going to stick to that. I'm going to keep my promises to myself. And I found that when I do that, I'm really actually a lot better at keeping my promises and commitments to other people. So it ends up being a good thing, but sometimes you just have to say no and set those limits first.
Where do you keep those those time boxes on your calendar?
I have a paper planner that I use, and I just kind of box things in. Usually every day is the same. I, you know, get up and have my morning routine, my time before the kids wake up, and then do a little work, and then we'll have breakfast, and then we do our school, and then we have lunch, and then I work, and then we have dinner, and we do our family time. I mean, that's pretty much the structure of every day. But every now and then, when my husband's got a flexible day, he might take the kids for the morning and then I'll take them for the afternoon. So we'll switch like my school block and my work block. But I write that down in my little planner so I can glance at it, and I can put stickers on it, and I can use colored pens, and it makes me happy.
Do you find those work blocks that you've set out for yourself are more productive than even having more time throughout the day because it's just so focused?
Yes, it's funny because there's a fine line between too much time pressure. You know, like I hate working when I hate to write an article the day it's due. That really drives me crazy. I like to give myself a couple of days ahead, and I don't work as well. And there's been some studies that have shown that people produce more when they're under time pressures, but they're not actually more creative. They think they're being more creative, but when you go back and analyze the results, they're just producing and producing and producing solutions because they feel this time pressure. So there's this kind of line that there. The flip side that I found is there's also when you say, I have 2 hours to work on this project. I want to get as much done as I can on that project. And I know this is my time for it for the day. If I don't get it done now, I don't get to get back to it until tomorrow or maybe the next day, depending on what my schedule looks like. So I definitely think that having those blocks helps me to focus, which results in increased productivity for sure. As long as I haven't overloaded myself. And that's the flip side. If I overload myself and I'm trying to fit too much in, then I get into that time where I just feel pressured and stressed and I'm not able to really do good work.
That's interesting because I've always had trouble with Parkinson's law, which is exactly that. Your work expands to fill the time that you give it.
Sure.
And I'm kind of like, yeah, but if I'm feeling so much pressure, and I think you just put it in a more clear way than I've thought of before, is that it's just a balance. It's not one's right or one's wrong. It's not like, you know, hey, if you want to get your book done, just give yourself 3 hours to write it and you'll write it.
Right.
I actually had a friend, his name's Thomas Frank, and he was trying to get a book written over a 3-day weekend because he saw that somebody else did it. And it just, I mean, it didn't happen. And I think it goes to what you were saying is that, you know, maybe it wasn't a failure. It just, maybe you just had unrealistic expectations.
Right. And I think those are different for everybody and, you know, everybody's personality, everybody's work style. I mean, it's different from me. It varies from one assignment to the next. I might have, you know, an article that requires a lot of research versus something that is a topic I've written about 100 times. So I'll need different time amounts for those and I'll feel a different pressure. so we can, and I think being aware of your own response is really important. And that's something that I've learned to do just recently, is stop and think and kind of analyze, you know, what's going on inwardly, mentally right now. Am I rushing? Am I pressured? Am I stressed? Because nobody likes working that way. It's just that we get into it, and sometimes we don't stop and ask ourselves why. And when we do, sometimes the fix is easy. Sometimes it's just, you know what, I'm just going to move. I'm going to reschedule this phone call for later in the week and give myself more time to, and we can do those things, but we have to stop and think about it first and then make the decision to not force ourselves into these stressed out little places.
Great. Well, I think I've gotten a lot out of this. I've got one more question before maybe we dive into the three final questions of the book, The Tool and the Frog. And a question, just because at Asian Efficiency, we're always into apps and technology and automation, mm-hmm. all that kind of fun, fancy, new stuff. How has technology played a role in parenting? And especially, you know, there's the fact that I mean, I've seen from friends and family members who have young kids, they know how to use iPhones. They know how to use iPads. And so I don't know. My question is tech question mark. How has that played a role in parenting and productivity and all kinds of stuff?
Okay. We've put pretty severe limits on our kids as far as how often they get to use touchscreen. They have like little iPad minis and things like that, and they get like an hour a day. I'm kind of a Nazi. I'm a screen Nazi. I'm also a nap Nazi. Those two things are imperatives in my house. But they love playing games, and for me that's been great because it gives me an hour of when they're just obsessively playing Minecraft or what it is they're into at the time. We don't give them a lot of free time on it at this point in their lives. They're so young that it's easy for them to just become obsessed with that and nothing else. And that's something we really wanted to avoid. What's been super helpful, I guess, as far as using tech to be a productive parent is things like, having a shared calendar with my husband and being able to send him my grocery list while he's on his way home. Being able to really quickly manage and rearrange and organize and communicate with people, as far as classes and schedule arrangements and babysitting and things like that. I mean, technology obviously makes that all a lot easier. And then I had one other point I was going to say there. I forgot it. So maybe it'll come back to me later.
Okay. Yeah. So that's great. So yeah, when you're thinking about the other tech point, maybe it'll be in the tool or resource section.
I got it, Zach. Homeschooling. There's so much for teaching kids using technology. So that's a little bit, it's out of the typical productivity point of view, but anybody with kids, you want to help your children learn. You don't have to be a homeschooler per se to do that. I mean, we can YouTube a video on like any topic that they're interested in. And I don't know how many times, and I'm sure every parent's done this, the kids ask you some question like, what is a molecule? And I'm like, Googling,
Why is the sky blue?
And I go, well, actually Google says da, 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 da. So they now at the dinner table, we have a lot of really random topics of conversation, but a frequent request is, Mom, Google it, find out, Google it. So now they know, don't ask Mom, just get her to Google it, because Google knows everything. So
that's so funny. One thing we continue to tease my dad about is a handful of years ago, one of those questions came up, like, why is this, or how many people live here? I can't remember what the question was, but his answer was, does anybody have a Google?
Anybody have a Google?
When we don't know anything, we're like, does anyone have a Google? Maybe somebody has a Google around here. Well, that's great. So let's wrap things up. I know that duct tape doesn't last too long. They're probably wiggling out of that by now. We'll start with the first question. What's a book you've read recently that you've gotten a lot out of?
This one I have sitting on my desk is it's called The Essential Rumi, and Rumi was a mystic poet from like the 13th century. And I realize this isn't your typical productivity fare. But this is something I've been reading out of every morning, and it helps me to remember, that all the busy stuff and the task lists and the going and the scheduling is a small part of a really rich life that we have. And that connecting with each other, with other people, helping people, looking for the divine in the world, serving with whatever gifts that we have and being generous, that's what it really is all about. And the productivity strategies and tools that I pick up, those are great. I love getting stuff done. I love accomplishing things, but they're for a bigger purpose, which is to serve God and to serve people. That's what my life is about. So that's been a book that I've been reading that's awesome because it's just little clear little poems, and they bring things back into focus for me. And that is a good starting place.
Wow. What was the name again?
The Essential Rumi. It's a translation by Coleman Barks.
Okay, The Essential Room. I mean, at first I thought you were talking about like having roommates or but that makes a lot of sense. And if you don't feel like picking that book up, just follow at Annie Mueller on Twitter and you will get a lot of those good quotes, because I actually just spent this morning retweeting like three of them. I was like,
yeah, whatever
this?
I'm reading comes out.
Who's this Rumi guy? Great. That's awesome. Is there any tool or resource that you've been using lately that helps people live a more productive life?
You know, I mean, there are so many great apps and awesome things, but I just, Zachary, I go back all the time to a notebook and a pen. It's always my friend. I brain dump on paper and I outline everything on paper and I make lists and tear them up and throw them out. But I just, when I get my brain out on actual, that physical act of just writing things down on paper, it just clarifies so much for me. So I go back to that all over and over again. I went to a paper planner this January from using Todoist last year, which I love. Todoist is such a great app and I really enjoyed using it. But something about that visual spread of my week on paper right in front of me just really helps me to focus and see what I've got going and hit it pretty hard. So
I think a lot of people would agree with that sentiment, parents and non-parents alike. Right. So lastly, what's a frog you have to eat, or maybe you just ate, or you want to eat, or you're thinking about eating? Some big project that you're that's in your life.
Well, the big ugly thing I need to do that I keep putting off, and you know, the reason I keep putting off is because it's not like a creative accomplish. I produced this thing. I really need to do something with the like hundreds of documents that I have on my computer that are in disarray. I'm not good at organizing digital things. So that's on my list. It keeps moving. I keep moving it to the next week, like organize your computer files and all these research things and all, you know, I mean, as a writer, I'm sure do this a lot too. You have all these resources and references and links. And I mean, they're just in like 20 different places on my computer. So that's on my list. And it's the frog I definitely need to eat.
Nice.
Next.
What tool do you use to write with most often?
I use Byword most of the time.
Use Byword. I've started using Scrivener. Mm-hmm. And that's one way, because I was the same way. I had stuff in Evernote. I had stuff on text documents. I had it in Drive. I had it in Byword. And that's been a really helpful resource for me for keeping everything in check. Also, if you there's a handful of the Productivity Show episodes that I would send you to. The number 5 with Darren Boss is really helpful. Also, I can't remember the name, but with Brooks Duncan, or I can't remember the number, but we'll put it in the show notes, as well as the resources and your articles that we were talking about. Put all that in the show notes. But Brooks Duncan is the paperless master, and he talks about some strategies that you can use to organize those documents once they're in your hard drive. And one tool that both of them mention is called Hazel, which you set up rules to automatically sort and sift through those things.
I was just reading Mike Vardy's post about that, which is I think of from a while back, but he was talking about using Hazel to automate all that sort of naming things out. I'm like, oh, it's brilliant. Oh my God, it's amazing.
Well, keeping consistent is so difficult sometimes, like you know, naming conventions and all those other things that are they're not sexy. But if you could sort of automate as much as you can, it really helps things out. I've got a new computer now, and it's the first time in my life I've ever had a computer with an organized hard drive, and it's because of just a handful of front end things that I thought about, like, okay, where should this go? How can I organize this? And then how can I automate it so I don't forget to do this type
Maybe
of stuff?
Maybe I should get a new computer too, so I could do that.
I just gave up on my last one. I declared bankruptcy.
I really want to be like, I don't, because I just have this backlog. I've been using this. It's not that old, but it's like 3 years old. So 3 years worth of drafts and. Oh man.
Yeah. Well, the strategy the main strategy they both actually ascribe to is that you just take everything out, sort of like cleaning out your garage. Take everything out and put it in one spot, and then put things back one by one. Mm-hmm. And maybe you can have a weekly time box of, all right, this is my organization hour.
It's something I need to do.
I'll get something done that I need to get done. Awesome. Yeah. Well, Annie, thank you so much for coming on. I think that I've learned some strategies, even though I do not have kids in my life. And when I eventually, or if I eventually do, then I'll be ready with some systems for them and some good strategies. So, if people would like to dig deeper into this episode and some of the topics we discussed, you can find all the links to in the show notes, and you can find that at theproductivityshow.com/24. And if you want to connect with us, we're at Asian Efficiency on the Twitter. And where are some of the best places people can connect with you, Annie?
Well, I'm on Twitter at Annie Mueller. That's probably the only social media place I'm on regularly. My website is AnnieMueller.com, and I blog about productivity at FreakishlyProductive.com.
Such a good name. And so if you want to find out or just thank Annie for all of her insights, you can find those resources. We'll also put those in the show notes. You can also email us at AsianEfficiency.com, or we decided we're going to leave the comments open on the show notes. So if you have any questions, you can put them in there, and we'll answer them there so people can see it. And if you like the show and you want more of this, please go over to iTunes and subscribe. That also helps us out in the rankings so more people can find us and be freakishly productive parents. So again, Annie, thanks. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for joining us. And for everyone else, we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this show and would like to learn more about optimizing your productivity, visit us at AsianEfficiency.com.